Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and alongside me is the Ginger Prince of Baseball, Bob Finkbeiner.
How are you?
And of course, as always, our super producer, Jason Ruggiero, is with us as well.
Good to be here.
So Jeffrey Loria said that dismantling the team formerly known as the Florida Marlins was necessary. How do you guys feel about your favorite team's owner after watching this circus down there?
Well, you know, as an Indians fan, I just feel like we just barely avoided what the Marlins are going through. You know, I think we were actually closer than we might want to admit to having six people lined up for opening day tickets or whatever that was. I mean, I guess that's what $100 million will do to your fan base. You know, like, you take all that disgust and despair and pay it off with $100 million. And all of a sudden, you sell out opening day in 6 minutes instead of having six people lined up.
Oh, money will fix a lot of problems, that's for sure. As a Pirates fan, I've looked at our ownership and management over the last while, for about as long as I've been watching baseball. And, you know, I don't think we've had the strongest leadership in our front office and our ownership, but I've never seen anything quite like that. That just kind of seemed like he rode into town like Professor Harold Hill and just took Miami for all they were worth. And now he has this great stadium that's going to sit there empty. There's going to be games where you're going to be talking about hundreds of people sitting in the stands instead of thousands of people that should be there packed in that stadium.
I may be wrong here, but I think they're going to make the Tampa Bay fans look like they're phenomenal.
Yeah, that's going to be like Yankee Stadium down there in Tampa after that. Well, on today's show, we're going to be giving you spring training updates from all of our respective clubs that we're covering. We're going to have a little musical intermission in between, and at the other bookend, we're going to have some emails and questions that we've been receiving from our listeners. So let's kick it off with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Initially, Russell Martin wanted to play in the World Baseball Classic for Canada, and there was this crazy notion that he was going to play shortstop as well.
Crazy's the right word there. Yeah.
I don't know whose notion it was. It seemed more like it was Russell Martin's than anybody else who was involved in this whole debacle, but Russell Martin has bowed out of the World Baseball Classic. Now he's going to be staying in camp for us. So
I think that's probably for the best.
Yeah, definite benefit thing to Pittsburgh, having him there and not playing shortstop. And it was funny, his response too, when he said that he was going to be backing out of the World Baseball Classic was, well, if I'm not playing shortstop, catching all those games is going to be too hard on me. So I think he just kind of wants to pace himself now, make sure that he's in camp, make sure that he's there. And a guy like that is going to be good for the development of, you know, pitchers like Jameson Taillon and Gerrit Cole, and building a rapport with guys that he's going to be catching all season long. You know, he's already got kind of a relationship with AJ Burnett, but Wandy Rodriguez and Jeff Karstens and even some of the younger guys on the fringe like Kyle McPherson, they're going to benefit a lot from just keeping him in camp all season. We have Jose Contreras in camp now, 41-year-old.
Oh,
I think he's
boy.
41 years old, 40, allegedly 41 years old.
Yeah.
Jose Contreras is in camp. He's planning to take it slow, as most 41-year-olds do everything a little bit slower than people, I think.
It's probably his normal speed now.
Everything is slow. He's recovering from Tommy John surgery, and everybody said that he's going to kind of just take his time, recover at his own pace. Nobody's really pushing him to do anything. He's viewed as a low-risk signing by the organization, so if he pans out, great. If he doesn't, we're not really out a whole lot, so there's not a whole lot of investment in him. One of the things, though, that they said about Contreras was that they just kind of need to be patient with him and get him back as quickly as his body allows. I thought that was kind of funny. As a recently turned 30-year-old man, I even realized, like, after I go running outside now, your body doesn't recover as quickly at 30 as it did at 25 or 20. So I can imagine what 41 has got to be like when you're throwing, you know, all those fastballs and putting all that pressure on all the joints and bones and everything in your body.
And that's an alleged 41.
Yeah, alleged 41. Kyle McPherson looked good in his first spring start. His fastball touched 95. He threw 15 pitches across two innings against the Twins. I was pleased after watching his outing, because he's kind of my favorite for the fifth spot in the Pirates rotation. I think we wrote an article a couple days ago about how we have Burnett followed by Wandy, and then James McDonald, and Neil Huntington has made it seem like Jeff Karstens is our number four right now. So basically, we're just looking at that fifth spot, and I think McPherson has the most upside out of anybody who's coming into that spot that's ready to pitch in the majors right now. I think McPherson will be a great fit. He's consistent. You know, he's not going to put some Justin Verlander numbers out there where he's striking out the world or anything, but you know, he's going to go out there, he's going to get you productive innings, and he's going to keep you in ball games. So I'm kind of hoping that he ends up slotting in that fifth spot. We have Gerrit Cole and Jameson Taillon. They both pitched squaring off against each other in the black and gold scrimmage to start off this whole spring training season. They both threw two scoreless innings apiece, and initially it was kind of the start that everybody expected from the both of them, where they came in and they both, you know, struck out a couple batters and everything looked kind of crisp and sharp, and we're hoping to kind of see that carry on through the preseason as well. And I know Cole yesterday threw two innings. I think he gave up one earned run. And Taillon threw today, I believe, and Taillon gave up, he didn't give up any earned runs. He had one run that he gave up during his two today. And then the last thing, this is one of the biggest philosophical changes it looks like the Pirates are going to be making this year, is going to be with base runners and controlling the running game. If you watched any Pirates baseball at all last year, when Rod Barajas was behind the plate, I want to say, and I can't, I don't have the number here, I'll have to pull it up in a minute. I want to say Rod Barajas allowed, I think it was 96 of 99 base dealers to steal on him.
Holy
I'm not 100% sure if that's correct. I'm fairly certain that's what it was, but it was some ridiculous number like that. He threw out nobody last year. And you can't put all of that blame solely on the catcher. I mean, some of it is kind of a philosophical thing, like I said, where they were telling pitchers, listen, don't worry about holding those runners. You worry about, focus on making your pitch. Now, this year, after watching all of that last year, they came into camp with a little bit different perspective. Yeah, yeah, like, hey, listen, that's great. We need you to make the pitch. But by the way,
you might want to look over every once in a while.
Just, yeah, step off. So they had an interview with James McDonald on PittsburghPirates.com. And James McDonald said that even during his warm-up tosses and, like, PFP drills, James McDonald practices holding the ball. So when he's making his warm-up tosses, he just holds the ball and he'll stand there and he'll just look at his throwing partner for a minute and then he'll throw the ball. Like when they're doing PFP drills, he'll step off just to kind of get used to controlling the running game, get used to kind of slowing things down a little bit so we don't have base runners running amok against us this season. There were times it was just embarrassing last year, just embarrassing to watch a guy, not even a fast guy, just standing on first base going, ah, I'm going to have second here in a minute. And he would just take it just like a champion. So that'll be one of the bigger philosophical changes, like I said, that you're going to see the organization making, is a conscientious effort to slow the game down, to allow our catchers an opportunity to throw out base runners. And I hopefully that will kind of show up in the metrics, you know, towards the end of the season when we start looking at that. So that's all from Pirate Spring Training as of right now. Let's take a look at what's going on in Detroit with Bob.
Okay, not a whole lot going on right now in Detroit, but we are following a few things. One is the fifth spot in rotation. Currently, a battle waged more or less between Rick Porcello and Drew Smyly. Porcello threw yesterday, not a very good appearance. After his first opening appearance, was very solid. And Smyly has thrown one so far, which was a nice appearance. So, Porcello's supposed to make, I guess, 8 appearances, which would be the most of any Tigers pitcher in this spring. So we'll keep tracking that along as we move along. The battle for a possible platoon left field, management continues to say it's a challenge between 7 different players. Brendan Boss, Jeff Cabernas, Quinton Berry, Don Kelly, Danny Wirth, Avisel Garcia, and Nick Castellanos.
Woo!
Of those 7 people, basically, Cabernas has looked very, very good. He's played DH, he's played left field, played center field, he has that middle infield experience, and we had a fan right into us, Mick Reinhard, talked about how he saw Cabernas last year in Eastern League in Harrisburg and talked about not only that blazing speed, but the ability to read a pitcher very, very well to aid in that jump, getting from first, second base, second, and third base.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's been hitting the ball really well so far this spring, as well as Castellanos has been hitting the ball really well too. So between that bunch, we'll be tracking that as we progress through the spring.
And don't you think, Bob, that having some speed would be an asset to that Tigers team, maybe even if it is off the bench?
Oh, absolutely. And another, you know, some different sites out there are talking about how you can factor in that Victor Martinez, primarily DH, the ACL surgery, missed entire last year. You're going to want to have someone come off that bench, pinch run for Victor later on in the game, right? And he might very well be that guy because he has outstanding speed.
Right, Victor's always been a station-to-station kind of runner, and yes. Now he's even older and had more surgery, so...
Right. Now, obviously, if Barajas behind the plate, they may go ahead and leave Victor Martinez on first base and say, go ahead and go.
They're a slow team.
Boy, speaking of Rod Barajas, we have that actual stat here. Rod Barajas last season gave up 93 stolen bases and caught 6 runners.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah. Yikes. So,
yeah.
So there's that.
Like a little league game out there.
Another Tigers prospect making an impression on manager Jim Leland is outfielder Tyler Collins, who was quoted recently by Leland as saying he's a type A prospect. He has begun the spring hitting extra base hits and making great defensive plays in the field. So it'll be fun to watch him. And I'm pretty sure we project, myself and other people along the internet following the Tigers organization, that he will be in Erie at some point this season, which we'll be sure to catch him in person. Bruce Rondon, the possible closer, maybe not, has thrown two times, made 2 appearances. He's been a bit wild. Has not been scored upon yet. Has that flame-throwing fastball, which Mike Avila says is wonderful and amazing, but the control just hasn't been there yet. So we'll see how that pans out, too.
It's kind of funny, too, because it doesn't take very many starts or very many appearances before fans start getting nervous about, because everybody was on board with Bruce Rondon. He's the hottest thing. Bruce Rondon is so hot right now. He's going to be closing in Detroit, throwing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. And after that first outing, everyone went, oh, my God, maybe
they've already reverted to their feelings at the end of last year when they didn't get a closer at the trade deadline. Everyone's kind of like, I don't know if you guys are aware, but Jose Valverde's not doing a very good job. We might want a different closer.
And the fastball velocity is there, but in his last appearance, he threw 22 pitches, only 9 for strikes. So that has to be a bit of a concern for Tigers moving forward.
Yeah, you're going to want to be a little more efficient. Yeah.
Max Scherzer is going to make his first appearance on March 2nd for the Tigers. And those of you that get the MLB Network, you can catch Tigers in action live tomorrow at 1:10 p.m. against the Mets. And on delay on Sunday, March 3rd at 9 in the morning from their game on Saturday against the Yankees.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds like Detroit's got quite a bit going on in their camp and some big moves that you need to keep an eye on as far as who they have closing down those games at the end and a couple positional battles as far as who they have coming off the bench. So let's take a look at what's going on in the Tribe's spring training.
Yeah, well, Cleveland got off to one heck of a start in the Cactus League last week. They scored 48 runs in their first 4 games, won every one of those games, and then in their next, I can now say 3 games because tonight's game is finished, they scored 2 runs and lost all 3 of them. They also, in the first 2 games, I think it was, they scored 24 runs and gave up 21, and then they gave up another 10 today. So, you can already kind of see what we already know about this team, even though it is early. The offense is going to be super streaky. The runs are going to come in bunches, and it's kind of going to go the same way for the pitching. They'll be streaky, too. It's either going to be lights out or it's going to be a slugfest, I think. So, of course, there's lots of performances early here in spring training, a lot of which, it's only the first week, so we don't want to get too worked up. But as far as injuries, Michael Brantley had a pretty nasty injury last week. He had a double, which he's been off. He was off to a great start. He was 5 of 6 with 4 doubles in his first, I think, 3 games. And he hit one of those doubles, was rounding second against the A's. And to hear Brantley describe it, they were running a double cut, so there was no one at third base as he rounded second. So he took off for third base, and it was a race. And Josh Donaldson got to third base the same time as Michael Brantley's arm. Ooh. Sliced it open with his spike. So Brantley's got 15 stitches in his left arm.
Ooh.
And he's going to be out at least 10 days. The only other injury in Indians camp right now is Joe Smith, who's had a strained oblique since before he came to camp. And he just threw a live bullpen session today.
Was that the same oblique that he had last year, too?
Yeah, I would believe so.
Okay.
He hurt it playing catch before he came to camp. So he's on the mend, though. He threw, I think, a 25-pitch bullpen today. So they're looking for him to pitch in a meaningful game next week. Ryan Rayburn, of course, who we discussed last week on the podcast.
Former Tiger.
Yeah, his chances to make this team. He is just sizzling at the plate right now. 8 of 13. He has hit 3 home runs. Those were in his first 3 at-bats of the spring. And he's driven in 6 runs so far. I mean, it's early, but, guys like that, as Terry Francona said, they play like they have to play like it's their last game because they're trying to win a spot. So it's not, you know,
well, that's exactly
nothing given for taken for granted for those guys.
You hear a lot of people say, don't worry about the spring training stats. Spring training stats don't count. And I agree with that. But like you said, for a guy that's battling for a position, right, if you're telling me that a guy that comes out and hits 3 home runs in his first 3 at-bats and the manager is not going to take notice of that and consider that, that's where I think spring training stats are important. Like, it doesn't matter if Ryan Rayburn hits 15 home runs this spring as far as what he's going to do during the regular season, but it matters for
him making the team.
Exactly, solidifying that spot on the roster.
And it doesn't matter what Asdrubal Cabrera does. I mean, he's going to make the team whether he hits 120 in spring training or 420. So, you know, it means a lot for these kind of guys, but not for those guys who are regulars.
Yeah.
Well, one person who did take notice of that performance was Nick Swisher.
Yes.
Because all accounts, he was wearing or spotted wearing a Ryan Rayburn jersey
around the locker room. Yes.
Did you guys hear about? I was listening to an interview on ESPN that Buster Olney was doing with I think it was either the beat writer for Cleveland or someone who was out there covering Cleveland in the Cactus League, and he was talking about how Terry Francona took a picture of himself wearing this giant oversized cowboy hat and had it turned into a poster. And on the poster, it said, "You will respect me." And that was what he had taped on the wall in the locker room when all the players came in. I think that's the kind of stuff, again, people respect Terry Francona, players especially, because they understand he's going to keep order in the clubhouse, but there's still going to be that good relationship, that good bond that he's going to have. I think that's great when you can do something like that just to kind of keep the clubhouse loose right off the start.
Yeah, and let's talk more about some guys who the stats actually matter a little bit for. Yan Gomes, who we talked about last week too, he has he's gone 4-for-8 with 2 doubles and 5 RBIs. Those were all in the same game.
Oh boy!
All those RBIs. I think someone made a comment, something to the effect of, "I don't think Casey Koschman and Shelly Duncan ever combined for 5 RBIs in one game all of last." Something to that effect. But Francona has made it clear twice now that I've read in articles that Gomes is not competing with Lou Morrison, that Lou Morrison is his backup catcher. Now, that could be spring training talk, the first week of spring training. He's trying to give Lou some breathing room to get his feet wet and not feel like, oh boy, here he's coming. I can hear the footsteps. But that's the line right now anyways. Their other line is that Yan Gomes, what they need to find out about him this spring is if he can catch every day. Because basically, their feeling is if he's not ready to catch every day, he needs to go back to Columbus and learn how to catch every day. If he's skilled enough as a receiver right now to do that, then he can be on the team as the 24th or 25th man and play a little first and play a little catcher, play a little right field. But if he needs to actually develop as a player, then it doesn't matter how many home runs and doubles he hits in spring training, he's going back to Columbus. So we'll see how that works out, I guess. I know there's a lot of Indians fans who are really looking at Yan Gomes and looking at Lou Morrison and hoping that Lou Morrison doesn't make this roster because they know he can't hit the way Yan Gomes can. So we'll see what happens. As far as pitching, a little bit of a different story. We've got some guys. Last week, Zach McAllister, Bauer, Huff, Kazmir, Dice K, they all pitched a pair of scoreless innings on the same day. So that was a really good day. That was a bright outlook kind of day. Carlos Carrasco really struggled when he got a chance. It was his first outing, though, in about a year and a half. So they're quick to kind of dismiss that performance. McAllister pitched again today, and he got rocked pretty hard. He gave up, I think, seven hits and 5 runs in 2 innings. So that was a little rough. Now, that was against the top of the Texas lineup. You know, and it's one of those spring training things. I think Texas came in 0-6, and then they jumped all over the Indians for 10 runs today. You know, so I mean, it's spring training.
Right.
You know, who knows? But the good news, I think, is that Bauer pitched again today. He put up 2 scoreless innings. Like I said earlier, Kazmir pitched 2 scoreless. And actually, Ubaldo and Masterson have both pitched a pair of scoreless innings.
Whoa, say it one more time, please.
Ubaldo and Masterson pitched a pair of scoreless innings. And and Jimenez had 2 strikeouts and only 1 walk.
Oh, my.
Which, you know, for Jimenez, I mean, it's all relative. You know what I'm saying? So
We can hope right now.
So there's hope. It's spring training. But, you know, obviously the pitching is what's going to determine the fate of this team. And it's been up and down so far. So the only thing looking out in the future here is the WBC players report this weekend. So the Tribe will lose Carlos Santana, Asdrubal Cabrera, Vinny Pastano, Chris Perez, Mike Aviles, and Giovanni Soto. So there's a lot of talent leaving camp there. Terry Francona said that Yan Gomes and Lou Marson would alternate starting catching until Santana returned. So we'll get to see a lot of that battle, and I think that'll be interesting to see, you know, if Terry Francona starts to backtrack a little, depending on how Gomes gets to play when he's getting some more at-bats. It'd be interesting guys in the bullpen get some more innings without Pastano and Perez. And if you're looking at prospects, if you paid attention to that list, we lost Cabrera and Aviles, which is our two shortstops. And Ronnie Rodriguez and Francisco Lindor are in camp just for this reason, that when those two leave, they'll get some at-bats. Juan Diaz will still get some, but Lindor has got a few, but he should start to get a few more here as we end spring training. So that's what we're looking at right now. One more thing, because I know, Fink, you'll find this interesting. New Tribe pitching coach, Mickey Callaway, he's got this competition going.
Oh, boy. What's that?
First pitch strike competition.
Oh, I like it.
Who do you think the leader is so far?
I'm guessing by the way you set that question up.
And not someone you would think.
In the past experiences of frustration watching the Indians in the last couple of years, I'm going to guess that Ubaldo is leading that.
He's actually tied for second.
Ooh!
Six out of eight first pitch strikes with Chris Perez. And actually, he's followed by Joe Martinez, which is just a prospect that they have in camp. He's 10 of 14. He's gotten some more pitches. It's actually being led by David Huff, who's 7 for 7 on first pitch strikes so far.
Well, maybe he has a chance to have a role at a bullpen this spring.
Well, that's the thing, you know. I mean, this is a guy who's had a couple different chances with the Indians, starting and out of the bullpen. It's not really clear how he's going to fit in on the team other than in the bullpen this year. So we'll see. He's off to a good start so far, and he's leading this competition for whatever that's worth. So
throwing those first pitch strikes is really important. They tell you that starting in Little League, working all the way up to high school, and apparently up in the pros also. So parents, parent coaches out there, if you're teaching your kids to throw those first pitch strikes, you're doing a good job. Keep up the good work. We're going to take a little intermission now. We're going to have a musical guest today. Our musical guest is Kent Pelissari, who is a little near and dear to my heart, as he is of my kin. He's a former Titusville resident who now resides in Fresno, California. So we will listen to a little musical break here, and then we'll be back in a minute.
Walking home at night with my knees below my feet, and then running so fast that I slip and fall, land right on my head. Don't know where I am. It's getting late and your light starts to fade. I wish you were here, right now. I need you somehow.
And that was Leota, written in 2008 by artist Kent Pelissari. Kent Pelissari grew up in Titusville, Pennsylvania, which is a little bit north of Pittsburgh, a little bit south of Erie. He started writing songs at about 20 years old, and after graduating, he decided that he wanted to go to Los Angeles, like most artists decide that they want to do. He went to Long Beach State, home of some famous ball players like Evan Longoria, Jared Weaver. And for the better part of the decade, he lived in L.A., writing and trying to figure out what he wanted to do with his life. He has those deep roots in Pennsylvania, though, and he never really forgot the area he visits back frequently. And it's always good to see him when he rolls into town. So we really appreciate him letting us use some of his music on our show. Now we're going to transition into a little Q&A. I haven't thought of a witty title for this segment, so if anybody has any witty ideas, feel free to tweet those to us. Or send them in an email or something. Yeah, we're all sitting here scratching our heads like, you know what? We really don't have a witty name
for
this.
Why didn't we think of this beforehand?
Yeah, they can tweet us at what?
You can tweet us at TriStateBB if you have any great ideas for a name for this segment. We'll make sure to give you credit the first time, but after that, we're pretty much going to claim it as our own. So
steal it.
So, yeah, we have our first tweet. Question is from Logan Batten. You can follow him on Twitter at Batten47, BATTIN47. Logan asks us, how about the Pirates' chances of making the playoffs this season? Well, let me tell you this.
Well, that's complicated, Logan.
Let me start off with this. The Pirates' losing streak this year will be turning 21 years old, so it's old enough to go out to the bar and buy a drink now. You got to kind of keep that in perspective. It's not like there's a whole tradition of winning where losing starts in Pittsburgh and people go, yeah, we can't have this. Let's go buy every ball player and start winning games again. You know, we've been losing for 20 years now, and it's just getting to the point now where Pirates fans, like realistic Pirates fans, are saying, you know what, I think we might have the talent to not finish under 500.
You have the worst thing going right now for you, my friend. Hope.
Hope, yes. Oh, yeah. Hope will do a lot of crazy things to you, like when you collapse after the All-Star break and have like the worst collapse that I've ever witnessed ever. I mean, it really crushes you on the inside. It got to the point last season, watching baseball at the end of last year was a labor for me. I would turn off a lot of games last year because it physically hurt me to watch them give away those games at the end of the season. And
every game,
they're just counting down. And then you get to the point where like, sorry, you can't make it over 500 no matter what you do, and you're exhausted from it.
That was last August for us Indians fans.
Yes. It was rough to watch. So you kind of have to keep that in mind when you think about the Pirates' chances of making the playoffs. Like I said, there's not a real great tradition recently of winning. You know, we have those, I think, 5 World Series titles already, but, you know, within the last 20 years, we really haven't been putting out some great rosters. You know, last season, we touched on earlier in the podcast, the Pirates allowed base runners to run crazy on the base paths. And I'll be curious to see with that new philosophical change in camp where they're looking to hold runners tighter to the bag, bringing in Russell Martin, who is not Rod Barajas, whether that actually has a statistical impact on wins and losses for us. You know, we've had poor play down the stretch the last 2 years. You have to start looking at what's making this happen. You know, why are we collapsing down the stretch? You know, James McDonald threw the same amount of innings last year as he did the year before. So it wasn't like he wasn't used to having that workload on him. So why all of a sudden did he collapse like that again?
Correct me if I'm wrong here, Andy, but I think now your team is more prepared, I guess, for the longer haul. I'm not saying that you're going to see Talion and Cole up, but you might now. If they continue to have success at these minor league levels, and it's a long season, maybe they come up and bolster that rotation or bullpen.
Absolutely. And that was just what I was about to say was when we're going down the stretch this season and we need that arm, we need that Wandy Rodriguez, we don't have to go out and trade anyone to get that Wandy Rodriguez impact player. We have one in Garrett Cole right now who, if he continues to progress like he has, should be ready for a call-up late in the season, you know, towards the second half. And he should be able to contribute and help us kind of make that push towards the playoffs, you know, kind of reinvigorate us and keep us going. You know, we shipped out Joel Hanrahan, and you heard a lot of Pirates fans, you know, kind of barking about that, like, oh, how can you trade Joel Hanrahan? Well, he was about to be up for a $7 million, you know, payday. And for a team like the Pittsburgh Pirates, it doesn't make sense to have a $7 million relief pitcher. I don't care how many saves he racks up. Saves aren't really that valuable of a stat. What we need are pitchers who are going to pitch effectively. So shipping him out of town, you know, I don't think that really hurt us that much. And he was one of those players down the stretch. In his September, he had a 5 ERA in September over 9 innings. He walked 10 batters, gave up 2 home runs, and he had a blown save over that period of time in September. I mean, it was a rough month down the stretch.
Stellar performance.
From all parties. I mean, we collapsed just about everywhere that you could.
The loss might have hurt more if we weren't able to re-sign Grilly.
Right.
But you have him back now.
Exactly. And, you know, Pittsburgh knew what they were doing. They had a plan. It wasn't like they were just going to go, oh, we're going to all willy-nilly trade Joel Hanrahan. And
the thing with Grilly is it's not like he posted those K-rates for half a season.
Right.
I mean, he's done this the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, this isn't like a flash in the pan kind of thing.
And he's trending the right direction. You know, he might be 36 years old, but his velocity is up a tick now. I mean,
he's a youthful 36.
He is a young 30. He's a handsome man, that Jason Greeley at 36.
What are we talking about, Jose Contreras or Jason Greeley?
That's a good question. So we looked at Bill James' Pythagorean formula. He has the Pirates finishing at 79 and 83 this season. So, his formula is based on runs scored versus runs given up. Now, just to kind of help put that into perspective of how you kind of need to take that with a grain of salt, last year, Bill James' Pythagorean formula had Baltimore finishing 69 and 93 and Oakland finishing at 74 and 88. So it's not like teams don't make that leap where, you know, statistics might say that you're going to finish like this, but you can absolutely finish, you know, better than that record. And I think, again, a lot of that stems back to now we have the Garrett Cole to call up. We have people to kind of help. You know, we're going to have Wandy Rodriguez for a whole season now. You know, we may have traded Joel Hanrahan, but like you guys said, we have Jason Greeley coming in to fill that relief spot. So I really like our chances of finishing above 500 and competing all season long. You know, the playoffs, that gets a little trickier. You know, you have a lot of good teams. You have St. Louis and Cincinnati who are perennially good.
I'm saying you're in a really tough division there.
Yeah. Yeah. So
the only team that you lost was the Houston Astros.
Right, yeah. Which that did us no favors, yeah, right, getting them out of
that's
town.
That's a whole bunch of wins sitting out there you lost.
At this point, the Cubs still should be pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Cubs are on the other side of bad. I mean, they're done.
Right.
They're done regressing. And I mean, I think you're going to start seeing Theo Epstein as soon as he can figure out what to do with Alfonso Soriano and that $36 million price tag he's got.
I'm trying to get the Indians to take that for about a year now. And they're not biting.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I, like I said, I like the Pirates' chances of competing. I don't like to say that the Pirates are or aren't going to be a playoff team, but I like to say they're going to be a competitive team. They're going to be a team where you're not just going to walk in and get that easy victory.
Well, you know, it's like you look at, okay, Cincinnati. They really easily could have been in the World Series last year.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally back, reloaded, took care of one of their big problems, replacing Stubbs with Chu. I mean, whatever you want to say about his center field abilities, he's going to be a much better leadoff hitter than Drew Stubbs ever was.
Absolutely.
So they probably got better. And, of course, they're toying with this, what to do with Chapman. Who knows? That could, you know, send him down the wrong path for a little while. But I'm sure they'll get it straightened out eventually. St. Louis, another perennially good team. You know, so you're looking at best case scenario, probably third in your division. So, you know, it's like, then you got to pull in all the other divisions to see where that leaves you for that last spot.
Exactly.
And it gets pretty complicated there, you know, but so I think you're right in just looking at, like, you know, chances of being a competitive team, good, very good. Chances of making the playoffs, well, it's hard to say. I mean, we're talking, you know, 8 months from now.
Exactly. And that's without mentioning, you know, Milwaukee with MVP candidate Ryan Braun. And, you know, they have Yvonne Gallardo up at the top of that rotation. And, you know, I wouldn't sleep on Milwaukee either. But, you know, like I said, I think Pittsburgh is on the rise. I think they're doing the right things there and they're progressing the right way. So we appreciate that question. Thanks a lot, Logan. Hope to hear from you soon. Our second tweet came from Colton Spade at Spadro. And he wanted to know, he said, I got to see Pirates pitcher Justin Wilson and his incredible MLB debut last year. What are the chances he'll make the active roster? Now, Justin Wilson, he's one of those guys, if you've been following our Pirates prospects that I've been posting on there, he kind of falls in line with a lot of those players that we have in that he's a really high ceiling guy. I mean, he has incredible stuff, incredible talent, but I think his floor is also very, very low. I mean, he could end up being, you know, great in relief or great as, you know, maybe a number three starter, but he could also bottom out. And the big problem that he has is his command and his control. You know, he's a big lefty. He's another one of those big guys that we have, 6'3", you know, right around 220 pounds. But last season in his major league debut, he threw 4 2/3 innings. He gave up 10 hits and 3 walks. Now, you know, that's an incredibly small sample size, 4 2/3 innings. But, like, this is kind of his thing that he does. He's not able to command his pitches like he needs to. And as a result of that, he's giving up a lot of hits to other players. And this goes all the way back through his minor league track record as well. He's touched 99 miles per hour in relief coming out of the pen in the minors, but he typically sits in that 92-94 range. But Pittsburgh really has to start looking at him as, what are we going to do with him? Are we going to be able to use him as a starter, or do we really need to look at him strictly in relief? You know, I think maybe he could sneak his way into a bullpen spot. You know, we're not really completely sold on any of our left-handed pitchers that we have in the bullpen. But again, today, you know, he threw 1 2/3 scoreless innings today against Boston, but he gave up 2 walks. You know, he had 3 strikeouts. Again, great, but he's really got to start working on that command and control of his fastball if he's going to be an effective pitcher. So, you know, like I said, I think I would be surprised if he started out on the active roster. I think he'll more than likely end up back down in AAA to kind of iron out those issues down there.
So, Andy, out of the Pirates camp this spring, who would he'd be facing for left-handed competition at the bullpen?
Well, right now, Wilson would have Tony Watson would be his primary competition for that bullpen spot. Watson is coming off a year where he saw improvements in his strikeouts and walks, so he's kind of making you know, the strides that you want to see a pitcher make. So as far as just having a left-handed arm and needing to be in a bullpen, he doesn't have a whole lot of competition other than Watson. But like I said, I think the Pirates are still going to need to iron out some of his command and control issues before he can really prove to be that effective relief pitcher that they need.
So is it fair to say then if Watson struggles, he's probably the first call?
He would be. I think he would probably be next on the pecking order if they needed a left-handed arm in the bullpen just to get someone out there. But they have a couple guys. You know, they have Andy Oliver, who's kind of in a
former
similar,
Tiger.
Former Tiger Andy Oliver. He's kind of in that similar mold.
Gary Seawolf.
He's that power-throwing lefty if they just needed someone to come in and just sling the ball left-handed. So he could be kind of you know, a good fit for that too. But I wouldn't be shocked at all to see him starting off in AAA and just to see them, just to watch the organization try and iron out those issues with him. Well, we want to thank all of our contributors for our questions today. We want to thank our musical guest, Kent Pelissari. We will be back next week with some more updates and some more discussions. If you're listening to us on iTunes, we would kindly ask that you give us a review. Those reviews on iTunes drive up our popularity and get us some more listeners, which we would love to have. You can find our website at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can send your emails to tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at TriStateBB, and you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TSMBaseball. So for Bob and Jason, this is Andy Burdick, and we'd like to thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.